The following is an interview with Mr. John C. Wells on August the 9th, 1975 in Miranda City, Texas, by F. Michael Black for the Oral History Collection of Texas A&I University at Kingsville.
I'm John C. Wells. My address is Post Office Box 246, Miranda City, Texas, and my telephone number is 586-2131.
Mr. Wells, where were you originally from?
West Virginia.
What part of West Virginia?
I was born around Ritchie County. That's near the center of Ritchie County, close to Parkersburg, West Virginia. In 1890, September the 9th. And then we moved to a little place called Beulah when I was just a boy. And that's where I went to school. Beulah, West Virginia, Monongahela County. And can't think of the name of the place. Name of the county seat and the main city in West Virginia is... of that county is Morgantown. That'll be...
Mr. Wells, what is your occupation?
Well, I started in there as when I was a youngster. I worked in my brother's barbershop, shining shoes for a good little while. I was about 13 years old when that happened. And then I stayed there and had an apprenticeship in the barber business, and finally, I was a full-fledged barber and barbered for several years when I was a boy, in my teenage years, you know. And then my folks lived at Copley, West Virginia. And when I was about 20 years old, I went home, went to Copley, West Virginia, and started working for the Hope Natural Gas Company. They were... the people who gathered the natural gas from the oil wells in West Virginia, around Weston, West Virginia. And then I worked in the pipeline department. I worked when they used to use the tall for making up the big line, 10-inch line. I worked on 10-inch gas line that took the gas out of West Virginia to other places. And that's pretty interesting work. I even worked on the ditch. I worked in the dynamite gang. And that's pretty interesting. To get to know, you know, have to dig a ditch to lay this 10-inch line in, which is no easy job. And then I also worked helping set up one of those big gas engines that fired at either end of the cylinder. There's something to pump that gas out of West Virginia from the gas wells in West Virginia. And now that has all changed. They don't use pipe, they don't tolerance it at all anymore. They use welders. They weld this line together. Then a little later, I went to work just a little bit later. I went to work for the South Penn. That is the oil-producing department of the oil industry, you know. So I went to work for them at Indian Fort, West Virginia, in 1914. And worked for them... till about 1920. And in 1918, they moved me from Indian Fork over to Doddridge County as a clean-out man. That's cleaning oil wells out and to make them produce more, you know, with running tools, you know. And I worked there from 1918 till 1920. And I had a brother-in-law living in Breckenridge, Texas, working for the Virginia Oil and Refining Company. And I had a letter from him, and he said, if you'll come to Texas, I believe I can give you a little more money than you're getting there, and it'll probably be a little more advantage to you. So I quit my job there and sold everything I had. I was living at Grove in West Virginia. That's over in Caldwell County. And we brought my wife and I and one little boy, Bill, brought everything we had to Texas in a couple of trunks and started living at Breckenridge in the Virginia camp. And I was cleaning out for them, keeping their production up. And which was pretty interesting. It was a little different than it was in West Virginia. The wells were a little deeper, and it was just a little more interesting to me. But I worked there for about a year, and they went into the hands of the receiver, this company did. Mm-hmm. And I was out of a job. So I knew a man by the name of Jim Dawson at working for the Magnolia there. And so one day I went over there and I said, Jim, could you show me or tell me how I can get a job? I've been out of a job a little while. He said, yes. He said, they're building a national plant over here just short ways from here. And you might get a job over there. So I also knew their farm boss, R.T. German. And so, by the way, I did get a job over there helping the welder. Now, I had been working, you know, on clean-out tools. And was, in fact, I knew a good bit about the oil business. But then this was something I just took, you know, to make a living, to earn my bread, you know. So I was working there, and one day a German come along, and he said, you told me you used to pump in West Virginia and clean out. I said, yes, sir. Well, he said, I've got a job over here, a good pumping job. I said, well, all right, I'll take it. So this was about 10 miles north of Breckenridge on the Baker Gannon. And I started pumping 10 wells over there, kicking gas engines off every day, three or four of them, maybe sometimes five. And so that's an interesting job. And so I didn't work there, but just, I doubt if I worked over 6 or 8 months. A German come by one day, this was the farm boss for the Magnolia, the man I was working for then. And he said, say, didn't you tell me you used to clean out? I said, yeah. Well, he said, I've got a good cleaning out job. It's what I used to do, you know. So I went over and took this job cleaning out.
Still for Magnolia.
Still for Magnolia. At Breckenridge, right? In the area of Breckenridge. So then I didn't work there very long, maybe 3 or 4 months, until one day German come along and said, I've got a farm boss job up at Breckenridge. I mean, Bert Burnett. Would you like to take it? I said, sure. So I moved up there. That was about 1925. Now that I moved up to Burnett and took a farm boss job up there out at Stringtown. That was the area, the little name of the place, that's Stringtown. There was, Magnolia had a camp there. And this was a new experience for me, you know. I had been cleaning out and pumping and working on the pipeline and all that. So I had charge of about, maybe 45 men that worked there. I had 10 powers and was working just daytime. I didn't run tower there. I was working just daytime. And I worked there I continued to work there until about 1935, just about the same work it was cleaning out and drilling some new wells, and they were in 1935. The last thing that I'd done was getting the logs up on many wells. They were fixing to start a water flood there. And this area was about, the depth of the well was about 2,500 feet. And it was a brown sugar sand and the prettiest sand you ever saw. This came across the Red River out of Oklahoma into Texas. And that's where this field is, this Bergman F field. And the wells were good. The sand was porous, and the production was good, and it was a good field to water flood. I would have liked to stay and water flooded, but they sent me down to Luling about 1935, and had the same kind of a job. It was about 5 miles out of Luling, out on the J.E. Allen. That was one of the big farms out there. And that's where my office was, on the J.E. Allen. And I still had probably more men working there than there was at Bertinet. And it was a little more interesting. It was in the Edwards Plateau, and that plateau, and the depth of the wells are about 2,700 to 3,200 feet, still considered shallow well. But that field, they bought that off of the oil from the south. Edgar B. Davis was the man who started to drill it. And this will be interesting to know who that was. And he sold it out to the Magnolia for $12 million. Lock, stock, and barrel. And I'm not sure just what date this was, but it was somewhere along a little later than the date that I went there. And they was producing 97 barrels of water to get 3 barrels of oil in that area. And we used, which is some little unusual, we used a lot of casing pumps, pumps that you run in the casing, didn't use any tubing at all. Run these pumps in the casing and space them wherever you wanted to in the casing. You could space them 1,000 feet if you wanted to and pump what they call skim the oil off the top. And we did that a good bit there, which is was a new method of producing oil then. And these... The only thing bad about these casing pumps was that if your hole was crooked, you didn't have nothing to guide those rods, whatever you had, 1,000 feet or 1,500 feet of rods, whatever, wear a hole in your casing, then you'd have in trouble. So, but anyway, you could get, that was a pretty good way of getting the, skinning the oil off the top, and you didn't have to handle all that water. And there was some well there, one well in particular, that we had a 4-inch casing pump in. It was an old-timey derrick rig, or a rig front, you'd call it. And we used the walking beam for the pump instead of these newfangled jacks. And that well was running about 25 strokes a minute, and was handling 2,500 barrels of water and about 25 barrels of oil. And I have two of the bowls on my banisters out there right now that came out of that casing pump that I can show you if you want to see them.
And how big around are those
they're
bowls?
They're just about as big as a baseball.
Softball.
Big steel ball.
Softball or hardball?
Oh, hard.
Hardball.
They're steel balls with a chromium plate on them, and that was usual to use that kind of a method to pump that oil with. Besides the other ways we had of pumping with rods and tubing, you know,
mm-hmm.
Just the usual way, you know, they use. But then I stayed there till 1949, and the last thing that I did there was to drill wells, to help drill wells, to put this water back in the ground that was putting in the San Marcos River. We was putting this water, all of it, in the San Marcos River, which is against the law. So, I don't know how many times, several times, I was a key man out there in that field, and they'd come by and arrest me, you know, for putting this water in the river. And, of course, I didn't go to jail or anything. I just had to pay a fine, you know. And Magnolia paid me a fine. And then they set out to put this water back into the wells, back into the well, and so we did. We didn't have it all back in the well, but we had quite a lot of it. And it started raising the production, believe it or not. As much water as we were handling, putting that water back in the bottom, with the bottom sand, you know, down below this area of the depth of the well, you know. And believe it or not, it raised the production on those wells. And I think that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. So, and then they moved me down to Moran City in 1949. And I had a little area, and my headquarters was over at Bruny, which is 15 miles from here. And then I worked there from 49 to 54, and they retired me in 54 at Miranda City, Texas. And I might give you a little of what the wells were like in Miranda City. They weren't quite so deep. They were about 1,900 feet deep. And Miranda City oil, which is a premium oil, about 22 gravity. And there's something about it that they paid a premium on it. And this same oil now that we produced then was getting about, I'll say $2.75 a barrel for it then. And since I have retired, they have raised the price of that oil from $2.75 to $5.75. And if the well makes less than 10 barrels, they'll give you $9.75 a barrel for it. And that brings us up to the present time. You know, I retired in 54, and after that, I pumped. There was a man by the name of D.T. Harbison that had a big plant in Fort Worth, Texas, and he makes subsurface pumping equipment.
What's the name of his company?
Harbison Fisher Manufacturing Company. So during the time, the last few years that I worked for the company here, Dick visited Mithy. He and I were a good friend, and he visited Mithy with me quite a bit. He told me, he said, "John, if you'll find a lease somewhere that we can drill, there's been a lot of these leases abandoned, and when the oil was cheap, that it didn't pay. Well, we're making 10 or 15 barrels, they'd abandon them." So I knew a place out in the Mills Bennett field, which the Magnolia didn't have any producing wells out there at all, but Mills Bennett had the most of them, and there was some other producers there too. But he said, "If you can find some places out there, an area where we can drill, well, I'll give you a fourth interest in it." So that sounded like a good proposition, and I said, "Well, all right, Dick," I said, "I'll try to find some." So I did. I found a place out there on the it's the Locust Field, and this is the magnet we bought. He bought 380 acres. One of them was so one was on the Hunter, there's 80 acres on the Hunter, and one was on the Lorena National Bank. They bought this 80, and one was on the Floyd Billings. So Dick drilled a well there in 1954, and on the Lorena National Bank, number one, and made 25 barrels. So I retired from the Magnolia in 54, so I started looking after those wells then, myself, in 54. And we drilled a few more wells, drilled three wells on the Lorena National Bank, and two on the Hunter, that was another 80, and that was all. We drilled just right at that time. There was, I believe we had drilled seven wells on those two leases, two on one and five on the other. That's right. So then one day, I started looking after those wells, and that was 1954. And about 1957 or somewhere like that, or maybe a little later, well, Mr. Billings, there's 180 there, the Floyd Billings, we hadn't drilled on. So he said, John, there's something wrong. He was taking the gas off of one of the wells that had been drilled a long time before that on the Floyd Billings. And he was taking gas off for his farmhouse. And he said, John, that thing's stopped up or something. Something wrong with that rail. And so I said, Floyd, I'll tell Mr. Abel about it and we'll do something about it. So they moved a machine out there, a baling machine, and on this well where he was taking the gas off of. And this, in the meantime, this field had been water flooded. You know, everybody knows about the water flood. And this well had filled up. The water had forced this oil into this gas well. And we couldn't bail it down with a baling machine. So we put it on a pump. We set a liner in it and run tubing in it and put it on the pump and made 10 barrels. That was about 60, around 1960. And I'm not sure of this date, but that's close. And then this well made 10 barrels for quite a while, and then the other lease was making about 250 barrels. And so then I continued to pump it until about 2 years ago, wasn't it?
It was 1973,
and my eyes got bad. I couldn't drive, so I had to quit. I had to sign off. So maybe this would be about the most of my experience, Mike, in these fields.
So actually, you've been in the oil business since what year, Mr. Wells? What was it when you first started back in West Virginia? What year would you say you?
About 1914.
About 1914.
Uh-huh.
So it's been well over 50 years that you've been associated with the oil industry.
Yes, sir.
Could you tell us a little bit about the setup that Magnolia had here, about something that you don't hear too much about, is like a Magnolia camp or this sort of thing? What exactly was a Magnolia camp?
Well, there's a central place where they have their office, most generally. And then to make it convenient for the men and for the for the foreman, whether it's close by so they can see the men every day if they want to. Mm-hmm. And
did they generally have housing for the workers at the camp?
Yes, in that camp at Bergman and Breckenridge, they had, I believe it was 20 houses. There was about 10 on each side of the street that ran right through the middle of them. And I lived in one of them there when I was working down there, you see, living in one of these houses.
Was there a mobile camp when you came to Miranda City?
Yes. No, no, there wasn't.
No, there isn't.
No, there wasn't.
You presently live on the side of an old Magnolia camp.
That's right. The Magnolia used to have a camp here, and I don't know just when it started, but Mike, it probably started in this house here, and probably was the first house we built in this camp, which probably around 1922 or something like that. And then they built onto it, and later they had, oh, I don't know, maybe 40 houses up here.
This was a large camp.
Yes, it was. And I can't tell you much about the camp, but in 1940, they decided they wanted to move this camp to Alice. So they just, there's a Tex-Mex railroad running right by here. They just loaded these houses on this railroad and took them to Alice. Just complete.
So they generally folded camp here and just moved
the whole camp
up at Alice
in 1940.
So what's left of that one would be one time Miranda City camp.
That's right. And now there's just three houses left here, and we live in one of them.
Something else you mentioned was a power. Could you describe a power and tell us what it was used for?
Well, a power is a big building, about, I'll say 75 feet long, built out of tin with a concrete floor. And in one end of it, there's to describe it, probably so you can understand it, would be there's a big wheel, a big iron wheel, about 25 feet in diameter. And in the other end of the building is the gas engine that runs this wheel. There's the engine has a pulley on it, and there's a belt that runs that wheel. And on this wheel, there's two eccentrics, and they pull a well. They run out from this power, maybe 1,000 feet to these power. And you can use your imagination a little bit, and out of the back end of this power, there's maybe 15 or 20 different rods running out pulling wells out there. That was one way they had of pumping the well at that time.
That was back before gasoline and electric engines.
That was a little bit before, yes. Mm-hmm. Now, these were gas engines that was running.
But these didn't set right on the wells. These were just one
single. That's right. It set in the power to run the big wheel and pull the wells from.
Are there powers used very much nowadays, Mr. Wells?
They're still using the places, and it's a very economical way of pumping oil. But now, you just had one stroke, you know, maybe 15 or 20 strokes a minute. And that's all. You couldn't run your weld any faster than that. For if you did, you'd interrupt the whole situation, you see. They were pretty good, but if you had to lengthen a stroke on a well, you had to put in a multiplier, what they call, in your rod line, you know, to multiply the stroke, see? But later on, they put, wherever these wells sat, that they put an individual unit that you could run as many strokes as you wanted a minute. If you had a gas engine on it, you know, you could run it 25 strokes a minute if you wanted to, or you could run it 10 strokes a minute if you wanted to. These were a little more convenient for pumping an oil well than the power were.
they know more about it than I do, you know. Now, I haven't had any, is it on?
We're ready.
I haven't had any actual experience with this fire flood, but with little field down below Miami City, you're just a short distance, that there's a lot of wells had been drilled down there. Shallow well, around 1,700, 1,800 feet. And they were carrying, they had water flooding them, and didn't have very much luck. They had some luck, all right, but then they some of them got the idea that they could pump a mixture of gasoline and air in. Oxygen and air into this formation and set it afire, and it would cause a force that would force this oil ahead, which it did. And it's one of the things about that I can't understand and don't know, but they say when they do get this, they have to drill a well for this purpose only. And that after you've got the well drilled, you might have to run tubing in it and put a pump there that you could pump either natural gas or butane of some description. And when you've got the right mixture of that, a mixture, a combustible mixture pumped in there, it lighted on its own hook. It got a fire on its own hook. And now this is something that I don't understand, but then maybe someone else might. But then this is an unusual thing, this fire flood, but the best method that I know of to force oil in most sands is a water flood. And that is, you just have to pump water in there until you first force the oil into, it'll go where the least resistance is, you know. And sometimes you can take a well, maybe it has been abandoned for years, and pump this water in there, and some of those wells might go to flowing oil. I've known it to happen. And I had experience with that in a water flood, which I just now told you about a while ago, about the feel that and go back. And it's still going on, it's still producing quite a bit of oil. And I expect this is about all I can say about it.
Would it be a fair question to ask you, Mr. Wells, what some of the more major or abrupt changes in the oil business have been in the 50 plus years that you've been in? What have been some of the outstanding changes?
Well, some of the changes that I knew in West Virginia was just some minor changes, but this will be maybe interesting to them to know that they used to use wooden sucker valves to pump that oil in West Virginia. It was a piece of hickory wood made purposely to pump those wells with. They were about 25 feet long and about 1¾ inches in diameter. And they filled a piece of 2-inch pipe just almost full. And so I saw the area change from those wooden sucker valves to steel lines. They used steel lines instead of the wooden sucker rod. And so the wooden sucker rod made you make a good hog pen out of it. But they were a good piece of hickory wood, 25 feet long, with a strap on either end that you could screw together. And one of the peculiar things about them was that to speed up things a little bit, and say you went to a well and your rods were parted, and you had the feed stick, which I helped do some. You would run in there and feed them, and the paraffin was so heavy that when you was going in the hole, you'd have to wait for the rocks to drop when you was running a full throttle and center rock in there. And say the well was 2,000 feet deep, and you was halfway in, and it come dinner time, well, just take your alligator off and let them go ahead. And that'll speed things up when you got ready to start work by just put the end of a rod in there, and you could gain about probably half an hour by that the rod would go fast until you hit the parasite. So this is something that I hadn't said anything about at all. And the paraffin is a life of the oil. You will get a well that has a paraffin base, and you will stop another one that has an asphalt base. And this paraffin, the asphalt won't give you any trouble pumping your well at all. But the paraffin well, you'll get to the point where you have to put the scrapers in there. Maybe you have to steam them. I have to help steam those lines right by the tubing. Run a lot of steam in there. Steam that out and make it into a fluid, you know. Which is it's about like a, oh, maybe apple butter. That's about how thick it would be that you spill on your bread. It might be a little thicker than that. And it gives you a little trouble. But they found out that they saved that, why, that was the life of the oil, that paraffin. It was a good price, so they saved it in a box there. In other words, when you went to the well to pull it, you would cut your piece of belt about 4 or 5 inches square and cut a hole in the middle of it. It's not quite as big as that rod. And then when you start it, well, take her out and put your scraper on and cut a hole in either side of it and tie it down around the tubing head. And I would see the time when you'd have to stand back and you'd get your feet in that paraffin. It was just on one straight line.
So they found that there was a use for this too.
Oh, yes. The paraffin, you know, is a life of the oil. That's what they...
You talked about the oil business and oil industry in West Virginia and the oil industry in parts of Texas. Would you say from your experience that there was quite a bit of difference in the way that the business was handled between West Virginia and Texas?
Yes, there was. So you see that they use the old farm methods back there. In other words, not like that. Here, if there was use or anything like that, they would have a scraper that you'd buy, you know, or a cleaner that you'd buy and put on there, you know, the cleaner right there.
That there was sort of homemade.
That's right. It was kind of homemade thing. And from one location to the other, you'd have to, maybe three men would have to take the bowl from one location to the other. There was every rig didn't have a burrow, see.
Something we hear people say around here, and the folks that aren't acquainted with the oil industry may not be familiar with the term, we sort of go out and pull a well. Could you tell us what's involved in pulling an oil well?
Yes, if you want to pull it, just pull the rod. You know, a well, when you finish a well up, there's a string of casing in it, probably 6 5/8, they call it, clear to the bottom, cemented. The bottom cemented. And that's, you've got that 6-inch casing there, but then the oil, you know, you've got the sand exposed down there. And then you run your tubing in there with a perforated drum on the bottom that goes down in this oil. And on this top of this perforated joint, just right above that is the barrel that you're going to pump the oil with. And it's a little smaller than the tubing in diameter so that you'll have a place to pump. And then after you get this run in, after the well's completed, and you've got your derrick built and your engine house and everything all ready, Well, this is the way I'm telling the rest of you. But you run a cup in there, a little man. What was about not over a foot long. It's got several cups on it, and there's a bone seed in there. You also put a bone seed in the bottom of your barrel, what they call a standing valve. And now I'm telling you about the one that pumps the oil. Then you put this little valve on the end of your rods and start it in the hole, you know. And when you get down to the barrel, these cups just exactly fit the barrel. You let it go on down in the barrel until you get close to bottom, just so that it don't hit bottom when you stroke it. You have about 24 inch or maybe 26 inch stroke. And it is the heater fastened to a wire line or on rods, steel rods, you know. Now in Texas we use steel rods. And some places they do use wire lines. And at the top, you know, it's fastened with clamps so that the whatever kind of a jack you've got, a rustin or a beam, low kind of beam, while you use. And then the pumper's job is to run that thing and get that oil out of there. See? And a jointed tubing will hold about the, seven barrels. So you can tell by that how much, when you get so well pumped up, how much oil you've got there.
When they're going out to pour a well, what happens then?
You carry stuff out there that if you're going to just pour the rods, where all you need is the rod elevators, you know. And they're specially made to go on there. And the elevator we used was the one that Cole Johnny used when he took his first well at Titusville, Pennsylvania. It was a very crude thing that I believe they just went to the blacksmith shop and made an elevator. I think that's where it is. Somebody had an ingenuity to do this. So now later on, they've got the elevators that are better than that. So you took the elevators and your moving factor is maybe a coin machine where you don't have a bearing, you know. And they drive up the well and raise their mast and they take the jack head out and lay it on the ground and then you start pulling your rods. And sometimes they'll pause, and sometimes you pull out and you don't have your standing, your valve on there, you have just the end of a rod sticking out. And so what you have to do is put a piece and tool on there and go back in and piece that out until you get the crushing of the moving of the arm out there. And then sometimes that standing valve gets bad, and if it's to do where there's a little stinger that you put on the end of your rod that you run in there, and screw off of that standing valve and pull it out. But this is unusual. You don't have to do that only if from your larger pilot, you know. And then when you get those balls and seats that hold the oil, they don't get to leaking, you have to change them. And the thing that the rod crew does is if those balls and seats are bad, they change them. And if the cups are bad, they change them. We put new cups on, go back in there, and you're all witnessing it.
Changing the subject again, Mr. Wells, and sort of as a conclusion, by my rough calculations, you're about 84 years old.
That's right. You're just about right.
And you've lived in Miranda about 26 years. So you've been here about half the life of Miranda City. You came here when Miranda City was about 25 years old. Would you be able to give us any closing comments on the outlook for Miranda City in the oil industry and what you think the oil industry will do.
Mike, I tell you, they're getting new things to produce oil with, and new ways, and there's just no telling. They never do get all the oil out, even on a water line. So I'm convinced that some of these days they can go back in these old wells and get some oil out that they didn't know was in there by some other method, by, say, some kind of chemicals or a solution of in their a water solution, probably, with some chemicals in it. And no telling, there might be something else in there besides oil. There might be a uranium or, I wouldn't be surprised, I thought there would be some uranium. And then, and just as passing by, nearly every one of these wells that are drilled, not every one of them, but a lot of them, you'll go through an area of coal. That is one of the jewel things in the United States. I decided to retire here. I bought the house that I lived in several years and fixed it up a little bit, and I think the climate's real good here, and I just retired here. Me and my wife are getting along real good now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.
But they were a good piece of hickory wood, 25 feet long, with a strap on either end that you could screw together. And one of the peculiar things about them was that, to speed up things a little bit, and say you went to a well and your rods were parted, and you had to fix these, which I helped do some. You would run in there and fish them, and the paraffin was so heavy that when you was going in the hole, you'd have to wait for the rods to drop when you was running a full string of rod in there. And say the well was 2,000 feet deep, and you was halfway in, and it come dinner time. Why, just take your elevator off and let them go ahead. And that'll speed things up when you got ready to start work. By just put the end of a rod in there, and you could gain about probably a half an hour by that. The rod would go fast until you hit the paraffin. So this is something that I hadn't said anything about at all. And the paraffin is the life of the oil. You will get a well that has a paraffin base, and you will strike another one that has an asphalt base. And this paraffin, the asphalt won't give you any trouble pumping your well at all, but the paraffin will. You'll get to the point where you have to put the scrapers in there, maybe have to steam your... I have helped steam those lines right down the tubing. Run live steam in there, and steam that out and make it into a fluid, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Which is it's about like maybe apple butter. That's about how thick it would be that you spread on your bread. It might be a little thicker than that. It gives you a little trouble. But they found out that they saved that. Why, that was the life of the oil, that paraffin.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good product, so they saved it in a box there. In other words, when you went to the well to pull it, you would cut your piece of belt about 4 or 5 inches square and cut a hole in the middle of it, but not quite as big as that rod. And then when you started, well, take a rod and put your scraper on and cut a hole in either side of it and tie it down around the tubing head. And I've seen a time when you'd have to stand back or you'd get your feet in that paraffin just on one string of rod.
So they found that there was a use for this too.
Oh yes. the paraffin, you know, is the life of the oil. That's what the... And they used it, you know, after that then.
You've talked about the oil business and oil industry in West Virginia and the oil industry in parts of Texas. Would you say from your experience that there was quite a bit of difference in the way that the business was handled between West Virginia and Texas?
Yes, there was. So you see that they used the old time methods back there. They, in other words, not like that. Here, that they was to use anything like that, they would have a scraper that you'd buy, you know, or a cleaner that you'd buy and put on there, you know, to clean the rod with.
Up there was sort of homemade.
That's right. It was kind of homemade thing. And from one location to the other, up there, you'd have to, maybe three men would have to tote their bull rope from one location to the other. There was, every rig didn't have a bull rope, you see.
Something we hear people say around here, and the folks that aren't acquainted with the oil industry may not be familiar with the term. We say we're going to go out and pull a well. Could you tell us what's involved in pulling an oil well?
Yes, if you want to pull just pull the rods, you know. A well is, when you finish a well up, there's a string of casing in it, probably 6 5/8, they call it, clear to the bottom, cemented. The bottom cemented. And that's, you've got that 6-inch casing there that then the oil, you know, you've got the sand exposed down there. And then you run your tubing in there with a perforated joint on the bottom that goes down in this oil. And on this top of this perforated joint, just right above that, is the barrel that you're going to pump the oil with. And it's a little smaller than the tubing in diameter so that you'll have a place to pump. And then after you get this run in, after the well's completed, and you've got your derrick is built and your engine house and everything already there, this is the way I'm telling in West Virginia, that you run a cup in there, a little mandrel, it's about... not over a foot long. It's got several cups on it. And there's a ball and seat in there. You also put a ball and seat in the bottom of your barrel, what they call a standing valve. And now I'm telling you about the one that pumps the oil. Then you put this little valve on the end of your rods and start it in the hole, you know. And when you get down to the barrel, these cups just exactly fit the barrel. You let it drawn down in the barrel until you get close to bottom, just so that it don't hit bottom when you're stroking. You have about a 24-inch or maybe 26-inch stroke. And it is either fastened to a wire line or on rods, steel rods, you know. Now, in Texas, we use steel rods. In some places, they do use wire line. And at the top, you know, it's fastened with clamps so that the whatever kind of a jack you got, a Lufkin or a beam, an old tiny beam, while you use. And then the pumper's job is to run that thing and get that oil out of there. See? And a joint of tubing will hold about 2,000 feet of tubing will hold about 7 barrels. So you can tell by that how much, when you've got your well pumped up, how much oil you've got there, you see.
Uh-huh. And when they're going out to pull a well, what happens then?
You carry stuff out there that if you're going to just pull the rods, well, all you need is the rod elevators, you know. Uh-huh. And they're specially made that to go on there, and the elevator we used was the one that Cool Oil Johnny used when he took over his first well at Titusville, Pennsylvania. It was a very crude thing that I believe they just went to the blacksmith shop and made an elevator. I think that's the way it is. Somebody had an ingenuity to do this. But now later on, they've got the elevators that are better than that. So you took your elevators, and your moving factor is maybe a pulling machine where you don't have a derrick, you know. And they drive up the well and raise their mast, and they take the jack head off and lay it on the ground, and then they start pulling your rods. And sometimes they'll part, and sometimes you pull out and you don't have your standing your valve on there. You have just the end of a rod sticking up. And so what you have to do is put a fishing tool on there and go back in and fish that out until you get your cups. You know, does the moving of the oil down there. And then sometimes that standing valve gets bad, and if you do, where there's a little stinger that you put on the end of your rod that you run in there and screw onto that standing valve and pull it out. But this is unusual. You don't have to do that, only just when your rods are parted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get those balls and seats that hold the oil, they'll get to leaking. You have to change them. And the thing that the rod crew does is, if those bone seats are bad, they change them. And if the cups are bad, they change them. They put new cups on and go back in there, and you're all in business again, you see.
Changing the subject again, Mr. Wells, and sort of as a conclusion, by my rough calculations, you're about 84 years old.
That's right. You're just about right about that.
And you've lived in Miranda about 26 years. So you've been here about half the life of Miranda City. You came here when Miranda City was about 25 years old. Would you be able to give us any closing comments on the outlook for Miranda City in the oil industry, and what you think the oil industry will do?
Mike, I tell you, they're getting new things to produce oil with, and new ways, and there's just no telling. They never do get all the oil out, even on a water flood. So I'm convinced that some of these days they can go back in these old wells and get some oil out that they didn't know was in there by some other method, by, say, some kind of chemicals, or pump a solution of in there of a water solution, probably, with some chemicals in it. And no telling, there might be something else in there besides oil. There might be uranium, or I wouldn't be surprised of what there would be, some uranium in there. And then, and just as passing by, nearly every one of these wells that are drilled, not every one of them, but a lot of them, you'll go through an area of coal that is one of the fuel things in the United States. I decided to retire here. I bought the house that I lived in several years and fixed it up a little bit, and I think the climate's real good here, and I just retired here, and me and my wife, we're getting along real good now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, John.